Now entering the truth zone, deep into the vortex of the information revolution with your host, Michael B.
My name is Michael B., and this is the Truth Zone, deep within the vortex of the information revolution. And we have had a really, I think, a good week exploring biblical truths that history and science are proving. And it was all sparked, as you may recall, when I had a can't even really call it a debate between two atheists who wound up debating themselves, which was amusing. But it sparked me because they had made an accusation that the Bible was false. And if you look at part one, Tuesday show, because I really didn't call it part one, but look at Tuesday show, and you will hear what happened. So yesterday, on my main picture page, you will see a map of the Nile Delta, and I talked about the oldest bones that have been discovered, once again, proving biblical accuracy. Now, today, I'm going to just play a long clip for the show, because, and you know, like I said, I'm very honest about it, very open with the audience. I'm having a colonoscopy today, and I have not eaten since Tuesday night. So you could just imagine how weak I feel. So it's in relation to yesterday, as I talked about the Tower of Babel, Nimrod, and the One Ruled Order. Now, I'm just going to prepare you. Some of this stuff is way out there. You're going to hear some, I guess, I listened to about the first 40 minutes of it. You're going to hear stuff about aliens and what have you. I'm just going to take some of that with a grain of thought, because here's the deal. As a lot of this content is very good and scripturally based, until new discoveries are found, like I said, take some of this with a grain of salt, really. And just try to follow the flow of what we're talking about here, because we're talking about the One World Order, and that it's not a recent thing. It does go back to the Tower of Babel. So when you listen to this documentary, I really want you to focus on that, and that this isn't just a political issue. This is a spiritual issue. This isn't a fight just here on Earth. So with that in mind, I'm going to play the clip, and it'll run for an hour and 10 minutes, and then we'll conclude the show.
Welcome back to Glop. I'm your host, Derek. Now, we're going to be talking about Nimrod, and I have a lot of stuff that I'm going to cover. I'm going to bring a lot of stuff up front to you as, information. Matter of fact, you'll probably have to stop, rewind, or take notes, but we're going to be taking a look at what I call the Nimrod experiment. And this is really going back into the days of Noah, all the way up to the Tower of Babel. Now, who is the man Nimrod? Let's just take a look at what Wikipedia says. Okay, so on Wikipedia, let's just see. Nimrod. Now, as a modern Nimrod, or Nimrod, Arabic, and so on, he was a king of Shinar, and was, according to the book of Genesis and the book of Chronicles, the son of Cush, the great-grandson of Noah. The Bible states that he was a mighty hunter before the Lord, and began to be a mighty in the earth. Extra-biblical traditions associated with him is with the Tower of Babel. It led to the, what to me is like the one world government, a one world order, and was the first moves to go against God, Yahweh. You can look and see this for yourself. I'm not going to read everything, but let's get back to Nimrod as a whole. Now, when we're looking at Nimrod, we're going to have to understand that there is something that takes place in the book of Genesis, in the sixth chapter. So I want us to take a look at what happened to Noah so that he ended up having to get into an ark and ride the waves. Now, you probably heard a phrase that says Gen 6 or Genesis 6 experiment, or a lot of reference, even by me, about Genesis chapter 6. I believe Genesis chapter 6 is the foundation, what Yahweh lets us know what a great evil came. Jesus references the book of Genesis in the days of Noah will also be the Son of Man. So that means there's something very important that took place in the days of Noah. So here's chapter 6, verse 1. It came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, the daughters were born unto them. And the sons of God, Elohim, saw the daughters of men, that they were fair. And they took them wives, all which they chose. And the Lord, Yahweh, said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for he is also flesh. Yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants. Now, giants is also another word for Nephilim. Also, Nephilim, which I want to show you, also means tyrant and a mighty person. So, in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, and they bore children of them, and became mighty men, of which were of old men of renown. Now, I want to talk about some great teachers that's out there that you probably, and I highly suggest that you do, is take a look at Rob Skiba. Matter of fact, let's take a look at Rob Skiba. Now, this gentleman here is Rob Skiba, and I apologize, Rob Skiba, if you ever see my video and you see your picture like this, it's the only one I could find that was also had the skull that you had in the background. The skull that he has right back here is actually not cradle boarding, but what is believed to maybe be a skull of a Nephilim. Now, this gentleman here is a great teacher. He actually, when I first started going down this rabbit hole, really opened my eyes about Nimrod and about the Tower of Babel. And then I didn't pay much else attention to Rob Skiba because he started going down this track dealing with the flat earth. But because of him, he made my wife say, if you want to look at the scriptures, because that's what we were taught in school and college, is that there was this type of paradigm that the rest of the world thought the world was flat. And she's an artist, and I am too. And she says, if you ever look at a horizon line, it's never curved. It's always straight. And that's how it is always. And so with that, it made me look at the whole flat earth theory. And I've got videos on that. I'm not going to get into that now. But he is the reason why I started to look into that side of it. So I'm going to say thank you, Rob Skiba, for having me go down that rabbit trail. It was very hard to go down, and a lot of things of pride I had to put behind me to look at it with open eyes. Let's move on to another man that was a great influence to me. Okay, now this is L.A. Marzulli. Again, I apologize to you also, L.A. Marzulli, for this image, but it was one I could find. And it was literally like me killing two birds with one stone. One that shows that this is another skull that's not cradle boarding, and it's also known to be possibly a descendant of the Watchers or the Nephilim. Also, he also got me looking into the Watchers series, because I used to watch Ancient Aliens, and I always looked at it from a biblical standpoint. And if you never looked at his Watchers series, please do so. And the other one that got me going down the rabbit trail on the conspiracy side of it would be Friedman Flaw. So that is also his image there. So let's keep on going. Now, there's other great teachers like Chris Putnam, Tom Horn, and Stephen Quayle. They also played a very big part in me looking at the whole side of the Nephilim and the Watchers, and actually why I read the Book of Enoch. And dealing with that, looking at the Book of Enoch, I also started reading the Book of Jasher. Now, let's get into the whole... Now, do you know where my origin for me doing this comes from? Now, I want you to see what I've started piecing together. Now, I just talked about Rob Skiba in L.A. Now, there is a view out there. Let's go here first. So who were the Nephilim? The Nephilim is Nephal, and were a race that became dominant during the pre-flood world, and are referred in the Bible as the heroes of old, men of renown. They were reportedly the children born of the sons of God, sons of Elohim, by the daughters of men. So we know that this was not. Now, there's a lot of people's different takes on this. A lot of people think, or historians and biblical scholars say, that there was the line of Seth being corrupted by the line of Cain, and that was the incursion that took place. But that doesn't explain what the Bible says. The Bible tells you and explains to you exactly what it means. And it wasn't two kissing cousins that got together to decide to have this 30-foot tall giant of a child, or one that had so much strength and power that it was mind-boggling. So there was this incursion. The Bible clearly shows that the sons of God are the same sons of God that's mentioned in the book of Job, that are at the council of God, Elohim, with Yahweh, and who shows up? Satan. God says, Satan, where have you been? He says, I've been to and fro on the earth, and can't find anybody. You know, God then tells him about Job, and says, you can test Job, but you can't kill him. But he kills everybody else around Job, but Job. But it's the same words of the Elohim, sons of God, are the same in the Hebrew as they are in Job and Genesis. So we know that this is a divine being. On Ancient Aliens, they'll sit there and tell you that these were the aliens that came down and had children, the star children, with the daughters of men. They're not that far off. The only difference between what they say and what I believe is they believe that a space shuttle came and bring these guys, and they, you know, was planet jumping and having all kind of relations with all the planetary place. They didn't stay with the prime directive that you have from Star Trek, you know, don't interfere. They interfered. Then they left us for some reason. No explanation why they left us, even though they supposedly were our superior in every way. So that puts a big hole in the ancient aliens paradigm. In the Bible, it tells us the same thing, but it tells us that these are spiritual beings able to transform into physical form, and they have relations with the daughter of men. We see this take place whenever Sodom and Gomorrah is to be destroyed. You have these heavenly hosts come down. Abraham knows that they are different. He runs out to meet them. One stays behind, which I personally believe is like the forerunner, or showing us that it was God, Jesus Christ, that was talking to Abraham. That's my take on it. He stayed behind because whoever stayed behind, Abraham saw that they had authority and had the ability to stop Sodom and Gomorrah from being destroyed. Because he goes down the whole list of if there's 50 good men, if there's 30, 40, 50, 20, and then by the time he gets down to 10, that's when the Lord tells him, just make sure we get Lot and his family out. And then we see that when the angels come in into Sodom and Gomorrah, the men come and lust after them. So there's this idea that this heavenly host actually had relations in some way with earth people. And so Lot says, this is a wicked thing. Don't do this. You can have my daughters who are virgins. You can have them and do what you will. No, we don't want them. We want those two men that showed up. So there was another thing that the evil in the world recognized. There was something different about these guys, and they lusted after them. And so Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed. And so here we're seeing that there was described as giants. And I'm right here, guys. I'm sorry. It's also important to note that they are mentioned as also that he would destroy the flood, earth by a flood. And with doing this, it shows that there's this justification, this need to purge the world of the evil. Now, the word Nephilim is rendered fallen, possibly faller, a tyranny, or a bully. Now, I want you to remember this right here about a tyrant or a bully. Now, it goes on the King James, which I read out of, is here, and you can read this for yourself. But there is something very important about this right here. For the Nephilim, they're referred to being a tyrant or a bully. We find out that the Nephilim, when they walked the earth, all flesh was corrupted. We see signs of this all over the world, and for some reason, like the Smithsonian and other institutes, shy away from, because if they show that giants existed, or that these entities existed, that tears the whole the paradigm of Darwin's theory. Just like the ancient aliens, there are holes in those paradigms, because, and if you look at the scriptures, and also I read the book of Genesis and the book of Jasher, which we're going to get into, you'll see that these holes that the regular scholars have, the Bible actually doesn't have any holes. It explains it to you in whole, in a way that if we're willing to accept that some things are supernatural and that the Bible is full of the supernatural, then we start to realize, wow, Nimrod is a foreshadow of the upcoming Antichrist of the world. Now, I do talk about other biblical texts such as Enoch, Book of Jasher, Jubilees, Genesis. I also want you to understand that a lot of people bring up the fact that you have Nimrod, and that Nimrod is really close to Gilgamesh, as story-wise. Both of them come out of the same area. Both of them have a rebellious nature about them. Both of them refer themselves into a godlike being. Nimrod was originally a sun worshiper. His name in Hebrew was Nimrod, and has been derived of the Hebrew of Marad, which means to rebel. Nimrod was born, what they say, 3,273 BC, about 95 years after the flood. Now, he is the grandson of Noah. Now, his claims to have the wisdom of the world that was before the flood, very important. He told them, I know the truth, and I know the mysteries of the secrets. Now, you have these secret societies around the world that believes that they have this secret knowledge. And when you look at the conspiracy side of it, you see that the Masons and the Skull and Bones and the Luciferian and the other secret organizations out there that are always looking for that ancient knowledge, that power is in knowledge. And that they're the only ones that's allowed to have these secret things. Even though God says in his way, nothing is made secret from man to know the truth of God. And so it goes on, and you realize that, and I'm going to leave this up for you to have, and a lot of this stuff I'm going to have on links down below if you want to go back and read all of it yourself, because it's really good information. But what this is telling us is that we're seeing the similarity of Nimrod and the Nephilim and the Egyptian gods, the Greek gods, and also other gods around the world. Very interesting, when you look at the historian Josephus, he talks about the clash of titans. In the book of Enoch, it talks about a clash of titans that takes place. And when it shows you, like, these clash of titans, Josephus puts it together and says, well, those were the Grecian gods. It was talked about in the Bible what the Grecian gods did. So Josephus already connects, and he's the historian that connects this together. But right here he says that, you know, he claims about the secret knowledge. The Samaritans reveal occult practices that caused the flood in the first place. They came to be wise ones. When you see a pagan god or two faces, such as a Janus is represented the knowledge of the secrets of the world before the flood and secrets after the flood. The person who holds these secrets is the eternal keeper of the kingdom of the gatekeeper to hell and the underworld. So the legend goes. The Bible only teaches Jesus has this authority, and Nimrod probably did know some of the secrets. The Nimrod were still on the earth, and there were various sources of status that he acquired the knowledge from the two fallen angels. Those fallen angels were known as Horus and Marduk. He was also inscribed in magical powers given to him by those fallen angels. Nimrod set himself up as a superior to God in every conceivable way. Now we see that when we look at the Tower of Babel. So let's take a look or talk about some of the things that the Book of Jasher, Enoch, these other texts, Gilgamesh, talk about. Well, in the book of Jasher, chapter 4, it says that, you know, Nimrod persuaded them not to subscribe to God Yahweh. He even moved a government and moved his government from being a freedom for all people into a tyranny. So in the book of Jasher, it talks about him turning his kingdom and him becoming a tyrant. From that, he, Nimrod, seeing no other way to turn the people away from God and from the fear of God, he then made them constant dependent on his power. So since I'm talking about the book of Jasher, I'm going to have a copy of it linked down below for you. So let's take a look at some of the chapters out of it that I'll be referencing. What we're going to look at now is the mixing of animals. Now in the scriptures, in Genesis, we see that God says he has to destroy everything because all flesh was corrupted. Now remember, all flesh is corrupted. That's going to be very important because it's going to be referenced to one of the other gods that, like Rob Skiva, L.A. Marzulli, I'm going to be referring to what they talk about. But let's take a look what Jasher talks about in chapter 4, verse 18, it says that there were judges, rulers, went to the daughters of men. Now, it talks about the judges and rulers here. It's actually talking about these beings, these strong individuals, referencing to the book, to Enoch, and talking about the watchers. It's talking about these tyrants, these Nephilim, and the watchers coming and having children of the daughters of men. And they said, took their wives by force from their husbands according to their choices. So they didn't care. If you look at Greek mythology, you see where Zeus is known to go. And he shapeshifts, he turns into different things, and he has relations with women. They have his children, which are the demigods. And she may think that she's having relations with her husband, but she's having relations really with this god. And that's what this is also talking about, that these beings were just didn't care about these people were married. If they thought they were fair, they were going to have relations with them no matter what. And so, and then all of a sudden they started taking the cattle of the earth and the beasts of the field and the fowls of the air and taught them the mixture of animals of one species with another in order therewith to provoke the Lord, Yahweh, and God, Elohim, saw the whole earth, and it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted its way upon the earth, all men and all animals. So there is this breeding of all flesh. Now, if you take a look at dinosaurs, my wife says that when we were dating, she says, I just think dinosaurs are dragons. It's the same thing. Dinosaurs was a more of a modern statement of what ancients looked at as dragons. So if you look at a dinosaur and you see this robust, giant reptile that goes and kills, just devours. That's what the scripture says that these things devoured. And so you're looking at possibly that we're seeing the leftovers of this genetic manipulation where we see these dinosaurs being what dragons of old. And so what's happened is that Enoch is, during this time, they've come to him. They've been doing this. They've been corrupting the seed. They go to Enoch and say, hey, we need you to go to God. We can't. He won't look at us, but he'll look at you because you walk with him. And I need you to plead our case to him. Now God gets mad. He tells him that man should not be pleading the case for you. You should be pleading the case for man. So in other words, God says, you knew what you were doing. You purposely did it. And you see that these fallen angels, these watchers, come down to Mount Hermon. And they make a pact. And said that they purposely did this. And see, this is called the Genesis 6 experiment. This is the corruption that these watchers came and did. In the book of Jasher, chapter 18, it talks about they just didn't do it to humans. They did it to all species. Now, get into the all species thought of this. And then we're going to get to Nimrod. Noah finds favor in God's eyes. When he finds favor in his eyes, he tells Noah, I want you to build an ark. Now, the scripture says that there's nothing new under the sun. That even archaeologists and ancient aliens will all admit that they have no idea really how all these mega structures got built. So I want to show you this image. Take a look at this diagram. This shows you in the Bible text the different sizes that were talked about in the Bible. Now, take a look at this joker here. 36 feet. And some says it was even taller than that. Now, take a look at the mega structures. Could that not, for this person here, be very easy to move those boulders? To make those pyramids? To make those mega structures that we see around the world? Now, ancient aliens will say that it was created by aliens, and they came to do this to make different areas. Well, what the aliens that they're referring to are this interdimensional being coming into in a form of a solid form, from a spiritual form to a solid form, where the Bible talks about that, and throughout the scriptures, that's what the angels could do. They had a child. What was born of them was a mighty man, man of renown, known as these giants. Because around the world you have cyclopses that are giants. You have all these things around the world talking about this giant race that existed. And for some reason, and there's evidence that shows that the Smithsonian wanted to cover up that there was bones that were sent to them that can never be found again, because this tears up the Darwin theory. So if these beings walk to Earth, like the Bible says, then the megastructures are now being very easily to be explained, that they were built by these beings. And in doing so, they started genetically altering things. That's where the Minotaur comes from, the Satyr, the half-man, half-horse. We even see all these chimeras. Matter of fact, let's take a look at if anything in modern day talks about the chimera. Now, a chimera in the mythology is a mixing of animals. It says, according to mythology, a monstrous fire-breathing hybrid creature, which you see right here in Asia Minor, had a snake's head, had a goat's head, also a lion's head. And so then you have this chimera, and we see that these creatures existed. Matter of fact, let's take a look at a list of them, or images of them. Here's several images of them, and it does look like a mixture of different species into one. And trust me, they were not like this right here, all cuddly. They were like this, ferocious, mean, devourer of flesh. And let's see if there's any other hybrids that was in mythology. Now, these images might look stupid, and not, you're like, no, that's not possible, that's just being ridiculous. But and this clearly is Photoshop. But we do see in today's society that they are looking at splicing hybrid DNA. There's animals that's out there that they're even talking about, they'll have so much human parts, would that not make them human? While I was doing this video, I had to put this in here, which was 18 hybrid animals that are hard to believe actually exist. You just scroll down, and here's one that says a liger. That's a mixture between a tiger and a lion. You have a tigon, a male tiger, a female lion. A zonkey is a mixture between a zebra and a donkey. Oh, I'm going way too fast. I'm sorry. So this is between a donkey and a zebra. Then you also have a jaguar, and a female lion. Then you go on down. You have a geep, a goat, and a sheep. You got a polar bear and a brown bear mixed. It comes out with the gular bear. A coyote and a wolf. And these actually exist. Again, like another type of zebra. And then you come down here, you have a domestic cat. I mean, this right here, there's a lot of people have these in their houses, and it is a hybrid animal. So, I could show you all of them. I'll probably see if I can add a link down below for you. But this right here just shows you, in our day society, there are hybrids that exist. So it can't be that far-fetched that those things existed back in ancient times. So just like in modern times, where you have U.S. scientists create human-animal hybrids to grow human organs the size of sheep and pigs. So we're already seeing the genetically modification of animals and humans. So it cannot be that far-fetched that these things took place back in the time, and the scriptures tell us that these things took place back at that time, and that it was an abomination to Yoav Elohim. And this comes from the Independent News from UK. So they're even talking about this. And there's another one I want to show you, another article real quick. Here's one from the Daily Mail, 150 human-animal hybrids grown in UK, embryos, and have been produced so in the past years. And so you see that the scientists and the doctors are doing these genetic modifications to human DNA and animal DNA, which I just showed you in the Book of Jasher was talked about and told that they were doing this in ancient times. And that we see these things take place in all of Greek mythology, that these animals existed. So you see images like this, and it talks about these giants that walk the earth. The scriptures talks about these hybrids, these chimeras, that were on the earth. You look in Greek mythology, it talks about these hybrids from the Minotaur and so on. And it tells us those things existed. Why is it so hard to believe that if they existed in ancient times, and the Bible says there's nothing new under the sun, and I just showed you modern day where they've already done animal hybrids, they've already started doing human and animal hybrids. What's going to stop them from creating the super soldier? Can have hearing like a bat, sonar, can have eyes like an eagle, have the speed like a cheetah. We're already seeing that there's children genetic modifications. Let's take a look at that. Now we're seeing this take place in our society today. Modified children and modification children. Some scientists say that it's going to be where you have to make a decision. Do you want your child to be modified before they're born? And then they say it will be a disservice if you don't modify your child. Matter of fact, China right now is already got embryos for parents to have genetically modified children, which you're going to call super children. They'll be geniuses. They'll think faster. They'll move faster. They won't have diseases. They won't be sick like a normal child. That's how they're portraying it. Don't you want your child to be the best that that child can be? And if genetic modified children can make that child the best they can be, why not do it? Maybe because the Bible tells us not to do it. Tells us what happens. The thing is that if you have a genetically modified child, what genetics are they putting into their DNA? The question you also need to ask yourself this. If that child is born, does the child have a soul? Or will that child be an empty vessel for one of the spirits, the demonic spirits? And I know this sounds horrific. It sounds like, a cheap sci-fi movie. But the truth is that if the Bible tells us not to do these things, if we do these things, does that mean that we take away from that child the ability to have the soul that Yoav Elohim has given to us because we were created in his image? Or will these be empty shells for demons to inhabit and have all these traits and these powers and maybe be desensitized from human emotion? Let's take a look at what the Bible says that happens when we do start to change our DNA. Now, a common question that's on people's mind is the mark of the beast. What is the mark of the beast? If someone takes the mark of the beast, can they still be saved? Well, see, we're going to see that in the mark of the beast, where it talks about there's something happens to us genetically. That when this mark comes, it's going to be looked as a good thing. You can't buy or sell without of it. The whole world's going to be a part of it. But in Revelation chapter 4, it makes it very clear that there is a separation between us and God, that they've made an oath and loyalty to the Antichrist. And the thing is that a lot of people are thinking, well, a barcode or something like that. I think the mark of the beast is going to be something genetically modifying to man. It's going to be something that's genetically, that when we get it, when you read the book of Revelation, there is no salvation. There is no saving grace. There is nothing but destruction, death in the pit, or thrown into the lake of fire for eternity. So there is a total separation when you take the mark of the beast. That when you take this mark, just like you have the Monster Energy drink, it's going to give you, it's got a lot of scissors, it's got a lot of good stuff in that drink. It's going to have a lot of good stuff in that mark of the beast. But the one thing that it will definitely do is have a total separation from Yoav Elohim. From Jesus Christ. No salvation, no grace, no nothing but a lake of fire. And then when I saw this, I was like, well, you know what? I mean, you look at the claw marks. and it looks like the claw marks of the Hebrew letter Av, which means six. 666. That means 666 monster energy. Give you that this image so that you understand that there will be something that you take that will be from that will mark you by the beast and forever give you separation. Now, I've been talking about all this. Well, what does this have to do with Nimrod? Well, Nimrod, I believe, is the foreshadow of what we're to see to come, the Antichrist. That all these things are taking place, that we are now understanding the book of Enoch, which the book of Enoch says that it's for a later generation when this book will have reference or be referred to. And the book of Enoch was in the Dead Sea Scrolls. That was found in 1947. Been translated. We now have it. And it was, you know, it tells us that these events take place and who Enoch was. We also see that in Nimrod's kingdom, he became a tyrant. That it was his will, and only his will, that he went to create the Tower of Babel so that it could reach the heavens on God's realm, which to me is the Stargate. And that in this day and age, we also have, I believe, a Stargate that has been built and been looking for parallel universes, which I believe will release the spirit or the angel, Apollyon, from the bottomless pit. And what is that, mind you? You can look no further than just type it in to Google. CERN. And CERN has said that they do look for parallel universes. That they are looking to open up a door. I believe CERN is our modern day Tower of Babel. Because let's take a look at what the descriptions were for the Tower of Babel. In Genesis 11, 1 through 9, it says, the whole earth was of one language and one speech. Did you know today that the whole world is pretty much under one language? Matter of fact, there is more people that can speak English or Spanish, really, and also Mandarin, that there's so many people that know how to speak it that it can be translated and understood in every parts of the world, except for some of the hidden tribes that that aren't part of society. They're still part of their own little groups, which I think sometimes better than what we have today. But it talks about there being this one language. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain. Now, understand, they found a plain. They didn't find the tallest mountain. They didn't find the tallest peak in the world. They went to the plain of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, let us make brick, burn them thoroughly. And they had the brick of stone and the slime they had they for mortar. They said, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the earth. So they were already, again, ready to rebel against God. And the thing is, guys, when they built the top, was building this thing, they built it in the plain. That means they built it on the flat land. And then building it on the flat land, they were going to make this thing reach to heaven. So that, to me, is, again, the Bible saying that there was this technology, there was this leftover way to have man build things so that they could reach to heaven. Now, what does it mean to reach to heaven? What was the purpose of them reaching to heaven? So we're looking at the book of Jasher. Something happens in chapter 7 in the book of Jasher. Now, see, in the book of Genesis, we see about that Nimrod becomes a mighty man, becomes a mighty hunter. And when you look at that, that's the same reference that was given about the Nephilim. It talks about him being a tyrant, being a leader, being controlling everything. But there's something that takes place that happens. It's something that genetically changes Nimrod into this being. And when you go down to verse 24, right here, it says, and a garment of skin, which God made for Adam and his wife when they went out of the garden, were given to Crush. Now, who is Crush? Crush ends up being, and it says, and Ham begot his firstborn Crush. He gave him the garments in secret, and they were with Crush many days. So, again, there's something that's done, a secret knowledge, a secret something connecting them to God, makes them think that they're more, makes them feel important. So what's happened with Crush? He goes and it says, and concealed them from his sons and brothers. And when Crush begot Nimrod, he gave him these those garments, though his love for him, Nimrod, grew up. And when he was 20 years old, you see nowhere else that any of the sons and the children of the sons put these garments on. But the grandson of Noah puts these garments on. And when he puts these garments on, says that Nimrod, became strong when he put on the garments. God gave him might and strength. He was a mighty hunter in the earth. Yea, he was a mighty hunter in the field. And he hunted the animals, and he built altars, and he offered upon them animals before the Lord. So something happened to him. And then it goes on to say that his strength, he strengthened himself, and he rose up amongst his brethren. He fought the battles of his brethren against all their enemies round about. And it goes on down and says that when Nimrod, that something happened to him. He goes on and says, and right here he says, therefore it became current in those days when men ushered forth those that he had trained up for battle. He would say to them, like God did to Nimrod, who was a mighty hunter in the earth, and who succeeded in the battles that prevailed against his brethren, that he delivered them from the hands of their enemies. And so many, God strengthened us and delivered us that day. Eventually, this thing inside Nimrod changes him slowly. He goes from being a what looks like a humble person or just an average Joe, gets this power. It gives him strength. And to the point that when he has this strength, he now desires for people to follow him. He desires for the people to eventually worship him. And then it goes on and says that he became a tyrant and built the Tower of Babel. Now, why did he build the Tower of Babel? Didn't realize, but my wife pointed this out to me, and I was going through my notes so quickly. It's Cush, not Crush. I apologize. But let's move on. One thing I want to add to Nimrod's character said he took some of their children as security, and they were all servants to Nimrod and to his brethren. And Nimrod and all the people that were with him turned homeward. If you look at what the secret societies do today in our lives, they try to get to our children. They try to control our children's thinking. Just look at the events around the world right now and think what they're trying to indoctrinate our children. It's nothing new under the sun. Nimrod did the exact same thing. He was sitting there controlling their children and said he was doing it for security, doing it for their behalf, but he was making them servants to him where they would not rise up against him because they'd be terrified to lose their children, which would be the next heir to their line. Now, as you see here, another trait of Nimrod was the fact that when the earth was one tongue, Nimrod did go in the ways of the Lord, and he was more wicked than all the men. Understand that. More wicked than all the men that were before him from the days of the flood until those days. He became so evil that no man, no human being was at the same caliber of evil that he had become. He then goes and he makes gods of wood and stone, and he bowed them to them, and rebelled against the Lord, taught all his subjects and people of the earth his wicked ways. So then he's talking about he's teaching them to worship these gods. In other words, he's setting up ancestor worship. He's setting up that we're going to revere the gods before. The Watchers. Where does he get? He gets this garment. This garment is a secret knowledge. It changes his DNA structure. It changes him. He becomes very wicked, proud, strong, controlling the children. Then he starts to control the religion that they're allowed to worship in his kingdom. So he became the ultimate tyrant. that it was against the law, it was against his rule to worship the one true God. So what's happening here in America? We're seeing the exact same thing. We're seeing as in the days of Noah, in the days of Nimrod. Nimrod is the foreshadow of the pathway for the Antichrist. The one true God is being shunned upon, is being taken out of everything, is saying that we don't worship. This is not a Christian nation anymore. Nimrod saying this is not a Christian empire anymore. This is not a follower of Yahweh Elohim anymore. We're no longer going to follow the one true God. We're going to worship these things that are made out of wood and stone. And they're going to be in images and depictions of what the old watchers look like. I mean, that's exactly what he's setting up in ancestor worship. But he does something else with the Tower of Babel, which I'm going to show you next. So the other thing that we see in the book of Jasher, chapter 9, is that we see that they made 12 gods. And they were large size. Now, this can go to the zodiac looking and the heavens at these different stars and constellations and constructs of man's imagination. They also made them out of wood and stone. They were also for the 12 months of the year. And he served each one monthly. So, as you're seeing that this person here is descendant of Nimrod, he does all this stuff and he brings about people to forsake God, forsake the Lord Yahweh. And in doing so, again, there is this breaking away of the world. They're breaking away. Nimrod set up this new kingdom. It is Babel. He's trying to reach the heavens, which I believe he's trying to use a stargate. He was stopped. The Lord came down and confused their languages, but it didn't stop him from making war with his brothers and around the world, and that they did not stop their ancestor worship. They kept doing their ancestor worship. And the Book of Jasher is really chock full of great information, and it is used by scholars and stuff like that. So, but do I say that this is one of the Bible, whether the text should be in the Bible? No, I just think that this is like Rod Skeeb says, this is a biblically endorsed book. There's reference to Jasher in the scriptures and the book of Enoch, that they do shine more of a light on the subject that was taking place during that time, that we see similarities of today where it talks about in the Bible that in the days of Noah will also be the Son of Man. Why was the Tower of Babel made? It was a rebellion against God. It was a war against the Lord. And we see that it spawned this bringing back the gods, bringing back reverence to the watchers and what they did here on the earth. It was another rebellion. It was another Luciferian idea that they were being illuminated, becoming better. And see, again, without the Lord, without Yahweh Elohim, what do you have? You have wars. You have a falling away from Him. You have the love of many waxing cold. You're having evil in the world. You're having things fall apart. You're seeing the wickedness is great. Just take a look at the world today and you will see that we are living what could be considered a parallel view of what was in the times of Nimrod. And in 9:25 of Jasher says, and the building of the tower was unto them a transgression and a sin. And they began to build it and wrestled. They were building against the Lord God of heaven. They imagined in their hearts a war against Him and descend unto heaven. So you're seeing that Nimrod and the people building the Tower of Babel, in their hearts and minds, they believe they can war against God, that they can fight against the Lord, that they can overcome and ascend into heaven. Could be what we're seeing with CERN. But what else do we see in the book of Revelation that talks about that? So just like you see in the book of Jasher, you see in the book of Revelation, and these shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for He is Lord of lords, King of kings, and they that are with Him are called the chosen and the faithful. So there is this mindset, even in the book of Revelation, that man will be able to rebel and will be able to war against God. And I was sitting there when I was reading Book of Revelation, when I first started, I was like, how in the world? I couldn't just wrap my mind. You're looking at someone that created the heavens and the earth, created everything. How could we think that we would be able to war against God? when I read the book of Jasher, read the book of Genesis, read the scriptures, and saw that there was this mindset, even in the times of Nimrod, in the book of Jasher, that men with the Tower of Babel created it with the sole purpose to rebel against the Lord and to make war with him. Then I started realizing Nimrod puts on this garment that it talks about in the book of Jasher. In the book of Genesis, it says that he becomes a mighty man, a man of renown. He's a mighty hunter. He is turned to a Nephilim. He is transformed into this mighty man. And people would look at this person and thinking if they could do these great wonders and have this power, nothing could stop them from fighting against Yahweh Elohim. They would think that they had this power to do so. And that's the mindset. But what ends up happening to the Tower of Babel? So what ends up happening to the Tower of Babel? And the thing about CERN, if CERN is the same thing that Tower of Babel was, in a plane, trying to open up portals, open up doors to other dimensions, and let's say the Tower of Babel was kind of the same thing, what ends up happening? It says, and this is, again, out of chapter 9, this is verses 38 and 39, it says, as a tower which the sons of men built, the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up one-third parts thereof. And a fire also descended from heaven and burned another third. And another third is left to this day. And it is of that part which was aloft. And its circumference is a 3 days walk. And many of the sons of men died in that tower, a people without number. In other words, it was utterly destroyed. They thought that this could go against Yahweh Elohim. They thought that they had Nimrod on their side. They could rebel. They could charge. They could overthrow heaven. And yet their attempts were feeble and they were destroyed. And a lot of people died thinking that they could war against the Lord Almighty. So what does that also go to? Now we're going to take a look at the closing. I'm coming to my closing that I want to emphasize. Let me take a look. Let's move on. And like I said at the very beginning, these two men, along with also Stephen Quayle, Chris Putnam, and Todd Horn, have been a major influence on me doing this study, doing this research, making this video. The one thing I want you to understand is that we are all Christians. We all read the scriptures. We try to understand the scriptures. We don't need to add to or take away. So everything that you see, even though I used the book of Jasher and talked about the book of Jubilees and the book of Enoch, I want you to understand that even if I don't read those things, the Bible still, in the 66 books that we have, still makes it very clear. If you're willing to read it and understand it. These two men, I have the utmost respect for. They have really put their life into this. They put a lot of thought in this. But here's the thing that I want to show you the difference between the two. L.A. Marzulli has the Watcher series. I have all of his books on the Nephilim. Same thing with Rod Skiba. I got some books from him. He's got a major library. A book that I would recommend is his Genesis and the Biblical Endorsed Text. It has all this books that I was talking about in them, and it's big enough for you to make your notes and stuff in there. Also, another book that he has is called Archon Invasion. Great book to read, to look over, to study from. But even without that, I want to give you what these two men have. They both have different views on what took place with the incursion. Now, for me personally, I think both men are right. Now, how is that possible? And I think both men are right, and also in some ways think both men are wrong in some things too. Both of them are great, sound arguments. And by far, I don't consider myself even equal with these guys. But I have looked at what they both presented, and with what they presented, it made me look in a different way. Take both of what they were saying. Let me tell you what they were saying first before I get into my theory on this. L.A. Marzulli believes there was this incursion by the Watcher Angels. They came down, had relations with the Daughters of Men, that today with the UFO phenomenon, the Nephilim are still there. They are still coming back. They're still trying to genetically alter. That's why they have the abductions and all this stuff, and that's just not going away, as he, in his own words. The UFO phenomenon is just not going away. So with that, he says there was the second incursion, again, where these angels and the Nephilim came down, had relations with the daughters of men. Well, if that's the case, then we would be looking at a genetic makeup that would trump the Messiah from being able to come into the world. Jesus Christ would not be able to come into the world, because if that was the case, what would stop them from polluting the chosen people's DNA, since they were doing it before the flood? And even though they say that, because after that, the scripture says, and the Nephilim were on the earth after that, that's where he comes in and says that there was a second incursion. I believe there was a first one. And I think the scriptures tell us what the second one was. Now, Rob Skiva, on the other hand, great man, respect and honor his work, but he believes that the only one that was righteous was Noah, and that his bloodline was pure. And so with that, Noah brought his sons and their daughters. He believes that their daughters were corrupted, and that they carried the DNA lineage of the Nephilim, and that's where the second incursion comes from, is from their DNA. Now, I only have a problem with that on this level. On Lele Marzulli, we see in the book of this incursion, we see it being wiped away. We see where the angels came to get Lot out of Sodom and Gomorrah, that men were trying to have relations with them, but they wouldn't have anything of it. So that means that the angels were not around, or the fallen angels weren't around in the way to be able to start up that second incursion by having sex or relations with the daughters of men on the second thing. Well, on Rob Skiva's side, saying that the daughters that were the daughters and the wives of Noah's sons, then that would say that God allowed corruption when he said that all flesh was corrupted, but he wanted Noah to save a certain type of animals to get on the ark. And yes, Rob Skiva's side is very compelling. The argument is very compelling, saying that the daughters, the wives, had this genetic manipulation in their thing. Well, if that's the case, then that would mean that, again, the population would be corrupted by the Nephilim, and then the Messiah couldn't come in to redeem us because the bloodline would still be corrupted by the daughters of men. So I don't think that God will allow human beings to have the corruption DNA in their bloodline to be allowed to come onto the ark, because it would just start back over the pollution. The genetic makeup would be polluted again. So there had to be something that took place. Something had to happen. And I believe what it is something that I think we've all overlooked, and I pray that I'm right about this, and I pray I'm not misleading any of you. And trust me, I've done a lot of prayer and a lot of research on this. I believe that Nimrod was the second incursion. I believe that whatever happened to him that changed his DNA makeup, that made him a tyrant, that made him become a mighty hunter, that he became... It says that he gained the garments and it transformed him. It gave him the ancient knowledge from the pre-flood, that before the flood, he had that knowledge. And I believe that something in that garment genetically manipulated and changed his DNA, just like we're going to see take place with the Mark of the Beast. And that he is a foreshadow of what the end times are going to be like. And that with that garment changed his DNA, changed him to a point that he was now a Nephilim. He was the second incursion. He was now the polluted bloodline. And now you're going to sit there and say, well, wait a second, how in the world could Nimrod be the second incursion? How could he be able to have that many children that whenever the chosen people went into the promised land, they said, we are like grasshoppers in their sight? So it's still saying that there was this giant race that was on the earth that we see around the world. I'm going to show you two things. Let's move on from here. Now, there are legends from Gilgamesh to Native Americans to other tribes in Africa that says there was a great deluge that came, and washed away the world. And there was a few groups that still survived. So there's a good possibility that some of the Nephilim did survive, and some are known to have gone to possibly Peru. But one thing that I think a lot of people are overlooking is the Bigfoot phenomenon. He's been seen everywhere, on all continents. He is a very hairy man. He's a giant among men. This could also be a remnant of the Nephilim that survived or made it over here from the Middle East. And that this being, this creature, this Nephilim, could still be walking the earth today, and he's intelligent enough to hide from us. That's why we don't see him. I know a lot of you probably think, I just lost you because of all the Bigfoot phenomenon. But I believe that this is a type of creature that was left over. We see in the book of Gilgamesh, actually, that Gilgamesh's best friend is this hairy man that ran with the cattle, that ran with man, ate the field. He was seduced by a woman. He became Nimrod's best friend. They went together. He was hairy all over. And in doing so, Nimrod, or Gilgamesh, went on the trek to find immortality, and we see the story in the book of Gilgamesh and this hairy beast. And then there's Esau, the legacy of Nimrod. I believe that Nimrod's bloodline, when he was changed, had this the genetic makeup that became into the gene pool for certain people of the world. And Esau is actually a depiction. He was a twin, you know. Says, after the flood beheld the time of Abraham, there was another story extremely important to the legacy of Babylon, was Esau. So you go in and you see the thing with Jacob and Esau. Now, they were twins. Jacob was holding the heel of Esau. And it says, and at that time of the birth, Esau supposedly came out of his mother's womb first. According to the ancient firstborn son, was a special family significance. He retained a number of the privileges within the family. As Esau was coming out of his mother, Jacob was said to have reached his arm out of the womb and grabbed Esau's leg. Possibly significant that Jacob wanted this birthright as well, and that they were going to fight for it in years to come. That's what we see take place in the book of Genesis. Thing is that Esau is described as a hairy man. Esau is depicted as a hairy man, so much so that when Jacob went and deceived his father, he had to put sheepskin on his arms and around his neck because Esau was a hairy man. Matter of fact, it says that he was a red-haired hairy man. Now, if you think about that for a second, red hair is not something that you would think of, something that came out of the Middle East. That would be something more what you would think of as European colors and hair color, but he was also hairy all over. So, could we be seeing the remnants of Esau actually be, and I know this is going to, a lot of you are going to be like, you've lost your mind, but I want you to just think for a second, have to think on the outside of the box for a second, that if Esau was a hairy man, and he had red hair, and he was hairy all over, and that's how his father, who was blind, could feel him, and Jacob was able to fool his father and take the birthright, could Esau look possibly what we see Bigfoot look like? Could that be a remnant of the Nephilim? The contamination get into the bloodline through Nimrod. Now you're probably sitting there going, how in the world did a man like this be what would pollute the gene pool to something that would be a hairy man? Nimrod was known as a giant. Nimrod was known as a mighty man. Nimrod was known as being transformed by some garment. Something genetically changed him, and with his line brought evil. He was one of the most evilest men in the world, even before the flood. So, how could he have polluted the gene pool? How could one man have done that? And there is actually DNA testing that shows that this could actually be what happened. Take a look at this. And as I was doing the research, I came to discover, and what I came across was this right here. 1 in 200 men are direct descendants of Genghis Khan. Can you imagine? This was done in 2003, a groundbreaking historical genetic paper research results which indicated that a subsisting portion of men in the world are direct line descendants to Genghis Khan. Wow, by the direct line, and I mean that they carry the Y chromosome, which seems to have come down from an individual. Wow, can you imagine? Now what you're seeing, what I'm talking about with Nimrod, being transformed, being changed, being made in a DNA structure changed to become a Nephilim, the technology of the Watchers. What Yahweh throughout the scriptures warns us about, do not crossbreed, do not make hybrids, do not genetically modify your children, do not do these things. They are evil in Yahweh Elohim's eyes, because someone that we all know that lived, Genghis Khan's DNA is in one in every 200 men. Do you realize how many men out there carry the genetic makeup of Genghis Khan? And with that, I believe that is the smoking gun that Rob Skiva and Eli Marzulli have brought together with both what they have, that I believe that this right here can be the smoking gun saying that, yes, there was a second incursion, and it came from Nimrod. Everything points to Nimrod. Everything sits there and talks about how evil Nimrod was, how the world was a new world order under Nimrod, how he became a tyrant, how he was changed genetically some way to become where he looked as if he looked like the giants of old, the Nephilim of old, and that's why people feared him. And he was a tyrant. So if we can have the genetic modification today in Genghis Khan's DNA, and one every 200 men, could you imagine if Nimrod, who had the ability to be this Nephilim, this tyrant, this superhuman, spread his seed to every woman he saw, and he populated the earth and corrupted the genome again, that brought that DNA, that Nephilim DNA back out of being dormant and brought it back into the world. And that is how we would have in Genesis, where it says that the Nephilim were in the days of old and also after that, that Nimrod, everything that points to Nimrod, and also scientific studies today that proves that one person, one race, one individual can have the Y chromosome from and be direct descendants from Genghis Khan. How many direct descendants could we have today that could be in line all the way back to Nimrod? And maybe that's why Bigfoot, why Esau was a hairy man. He had red hair all over. Why Yeti, Bigfoot's been known as having reddish color hair. Seeing today the elite saying they are a chosen race, that they are chosen people, that they believe that their genetic makeup makes them better than everybody else, and that's why they're known as the elite. Why the idea of Israelites thinking that they are the remnant, and I'm not saying they're not, I'm just saying that they say that they're the remnant of Yahweh Elohim, that they're from Abraham's descendants. That means that they would have to have the genetic makeup that would take them all the way back to the days of Abraham, because he would be the father of Abraham, had many sons. Many sons had father Abraham. I am one of them, and so are you. It makes it where you realize that there is this genetic makeup that's very important to in Yahweh Elohim's eyes. And that's why I personally don't think that Yahweh would have allowed these daughters of men that would have had a pollution in their genome to be allowed to get on the ark and be married to Noah's sons and carry that DNA. And I don't believe that it was another angel incursion that came and took the, because what would stop them from destroying the bloodline of Jesus Christ, the chosen bloodline for the Messiah to come. I believe it comes from Nimrod. I think all things point to Nimrod and his new world order. And so what does this mean for Christians and not Christians? This could be a forerunner to the end of the days. And what if they were able to find the DNA structure, because there is these things out there that says that they found that people believe that they found Gilgamesh or found Nimrod's tomb or even his body. And they believe that all you have to have is a little bit of his DNA to clone him again. And we know that cloning works. We know that cloning can happen. So, let's say that the tomb of Gilgamesh was found. The tomb of Nimrod was found. Let's say he was mummified. Could he be the return of this Nephilim, the thing that we could get our closest to, what man in our evil ways could get close to having a descendant of the Watchers? A Nephilim, a Nimrod, something that changed his DNA structure. And cloning, and what would happen to stop you from doing that? Now, that is the conspiracy side of it. And I know a lot of people have discussed that and talked about that being a possibility. And it's not very far-fetched when you see that we have mummies today that we still can get DNA from, that we still have today where woolly mammoths are frozen solid in ice, and they can still get the DNA from it. So DNA will probably play a big role in end-time prophecy, probably would be something that would tie to the Nephilim. It's also believed and it's also known that when we went into Iraq, the United States said there were weapons of mass destruction, but no weapons on mortal man's mind was found. But yet, around the world and all around Iraq, all their museums was ransacked and all knowledge dealing with Gilgamesh and the Sumerians were taken. And it's supposedly that they took even more, and that the power they were looking for was something of old that could be what Nimrod found from the garment that possibly changed his DNA and made him into a Nephilim. So there is a technology, a knowledge out there that God warns us constantly, do not tamper with his bloodline. Do not tamper with animals. Do not change the DNA. Do not make hybrids. Do not make chimeras. Do not modify your children. God constantly tells us not to mess with the genomes. He tells us not to mess with the DNA. That the DNA is the important thing of not to be touched and messed with. But yet, something happens. Something will happen in the end times. And we're already seeing where these animals, which I showed you previously, are the hybrids. These genetic modified children, that they're saying if it's not done, that you're going to make them where they're not going to succeed in the world. They're using a fear tactic. And so right there, guys, is what I believe, is that the second incursion was Nimrod. That he changed his DNA somehow. And in doing so, he possibly had several offspring from different women, which could tie into where I showed you that Genghis Khan did. And 1 out of 200 people have Genghis Khan's DNA, their makeup from him. It's his descendants. That could be what the descendants are from. And the second incursion is from the line of Nimrod, the one that was changed into a Nephilim. I hope you got a lot of information out of this. I hope this helps you out. I want to thank y'all so much for watching. Thank you so much for your support of this channel. Please do support, you know, also these other guys that I've mentioned in here. They're a great source of literature, stuff to read. Make sure you constantly read your scriptures in your Bible. You'll be amazed at all the information that you can find just in it and what we are told will be the days to come. Thank you again. And as always, is what I said at the very end, please pay attention to your surroundings. You never know what lies around the corner.
All right, so that concludes our show, and I hope that it was, informational. And we'll be back. I will be back live tomorrow as normal. I appreciate your patience. My name is Michael B. This is the Truth Zone. See you tomorrow, 10 a.m. Central Time.